Pre-recorded, completely unscripted, and about as organised as the thought processes of some members of the Australian Senate, you're listening to news, views and opinions on events from here at home and around the globe on politics, business and society in general. This is the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
Welcome back, dear listener. We're up to episode 54 of the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove. It's the 20th of July, 2016. Sitting back and relaxing and drinking one of my beers that I gave him. Quite possibly.
I am actually drinking a beer, yes.
There you go. So yes, I've paid my bet, and Scott's enjoying some... Fat Yak or whatever it's called.
Fat Yak, yes.
Yeah, so, well done, Scott. I shall get that back at a later time. So we've had plenty of things happen this week, Scott, around the world, and
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the big thing coming out of France and then the United States. It's all.
Turkey.
It's all a bit awful, really.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah, Turkey. Yes, I forgot about Turkey, too. And that's gone a really bizarre direction, hasn't it?
Erdogan, the direction on that one? Just the coup?
Erdogan has now begun arresting and sacking thousands of public servants. And, you know, there was a report that I read on the weekend that suggested that 3,000 secular judges had been arrested.
Yeah.
So it's a concern. It looks like Turkey could be headed well and truly away from the secular republic that Ataturk founded.
Mm. So it's one of those situations where the military was seen as a secular influence in the country, and now that he's cleaning that out, and he'll replace it, no doubt, with other people, it's going to be less secular and a lot more religious, unfortunately, in Turkey.
Well, that certainly looks that way, yes. Mm. And that's a real concern.
Mm. Mm.
Because, you know, that was one of the beacons of the Middle East, was Turkey.
Yeah. So I don't know how he's going to try all these people. I mean, if you've locked up 3,000 judges, who's left to actually conduct the trials? But I guess he'll...
Well, I imagine he'll get religious judges in, will he?
Yeah, he'll quickly fill those roles, no doubt. So
yeah,
there'll be a slight delay while they swear in a few hundred judges to quickly deal with them.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
You wouldn't want to be in their position. So that's a little bit on Turkey. And in America, with the whole Black Lives Matter shooting... Scott, I am pessimistic about the future of America, and I'm prepared to make a prediction on this one. Like, there are so many guns in America, and there are so many poor black people who rightfully feel downtrodden and angry, and I just think if there are more shootings of black people by policemen, which there will be, I think people are going to retaliate. I think these, I think this is going to inspire a lot of shootings by black people in response to any shootings by white policemen of black people.
I tend to agree with you that I don't think we've seen the last of the reprisals, and you know these police officers were deliberately targeted and, you know, they were murdered. And it appears to have been a reprisal for the killing of those blacks earlier by police.
Definitely.
Now, Obama has said that it's not an isolated incident. He said that it is to do with the what's the word I'm groping for? The disparity in the criminal justice system right now.
Mm.
And I think he's right. Mm. And I fear that there will be further murders of police officers, and that it will get out of control. Mm. The only bright spark of Donald Trump being selected by the Republicans today is that the midterm elections will
more than likely go the Democrats' way rather than the Republicans' way. And hopefully the Democrats will be left with enough numbers on the floor of the House and the Senate to get some meaningful gun reform through.
Yeah.
You know, that is the only hope that America has got, is that they are going to have to... they're going to have to bite the bullet, and they're going to have to tell the NRA to go and get stuffed, and they're going to have to reform their gun ownership laws.
I reckon they could pass laws now, Scott, and so many people would ignore the laws that would be ineffective.
Oh, for sure. For sure. There's no doubt that if they were to introduce laws like we had here in Australia, there's no doubt that the biggest selling items would be... pipes and that sort of stuff that they were selling, and that rifle owners and that sort of stuff were burying their weapons.
Mm.
There's no doubt that that's what would happen. But it is... I think that they've got to do something. Mm. And I think they're going to be forced to it. And I think that the number of police officers who have died and will die over this is going to force their hand.
Yeah, I reckon just the fundamentals that caused that shooting are not going to go away, and the precedent and a bit of inspiration has been set, and I reckon just the change will be that they'll be shooting white police officers and then they won't get caught. Like, they'll run and hide, and you'll have sort of serial killer type stuff happening. Like, it sounds grim, but there's a prediction. I hope I'm wrong, but I just think that that's the direction they're heading.
I hope you're wrong too, but it's, you have to say that it's unlikely that you're wrong.
Mm.
You know, it is fairly brutal what's happening over there on the streets.
Mm. All right, back closer to home, we've got a new ministry sworn in, Scott, and my son sent me this about the swearing-in ceremony, and a little highlight that he gave me was that the Special Minister of State, Scott Ryan, won the prize for the most ostentatious Bible, his tome too heavy to hold while he posed for a photograph following his swearing-in. That's a bad sign.
I'm pretty sure he's the bloke that brought his own Bible in all these other times, and he's always brought in this gigantic Bible,
right?
And it's just looking ridiculous now, isn't it?
Mm. So I had to do a quick Google of Scott Ryan, and according to Wikipedia, Senator representing the state of Victoria for the Liberal Party since 2007, and while at university, served as president of the Melbourne University Liberal Club and was a member of the Australian Liberals Student Federation. And here's the part that has got me, Scott. In 2008, he was a research fellow at the Institute of Public Affairs.
Public Affairs.
So...
yeah, they just keep pushing him out, don't they?
Yep. So he and James Patterson. James Patterson was Victoria as well, I think. So...
Yeah.
So the Institute of and Public also Affairs. Then, yes.
And also Tim Mander, wasn't it? Or Tim something or other.
We'll be talking about him.
Yes, I know. Tim Wilson. He was also from the IPA. Yeah.
We will, yeah. Speaking of...
he's also from Victoria.
Yeah. Which is interesting, given that the Andrews government is such a great government down there, but they're, Queensland's accused of providing kooky politicians from time to time, but the Liberals in Victoria are cranking out their fair share.
They are pushing out their own fair share of kooky ones, aren't they? Yeah.
Speaking of kooky, I'm worried, Scott, because I find myself agreeing with Corey Bernardi
on this issue.
Do you agree as well?
On this occasion, I agree with him also. So
dear listener, rack your brain and think, what could it be that we could possibly agree with Corey Bernardi on so unanimously? And, well, it's to do with Kevin Rudd. And Kevin Rudd in recent times, isn't he was always denying that he was making a run in the UN, and he's now, you know, openly said that he wants the position of United Nations Secretary General, despite denying it all the time. And Corey Bernardi came out with an article basically saying that's, we in no way should we endorse this guy. And he says, megalomaniac, vengeful, unstable bastard with a vicious temper who put his own self-interest ahead of the whole country as a whole. And that's how Labour Party colleagues described Kevin Rudd. So, let alone everybody else.
Well, you know, and I find it somewhat ridiculous that Shorten has turned around and said, well, you know, you're the Australian government, you should be backing an Australian.
Hmm.
And, you know, frankly, Helen Clark would make a much better UN Secretary General than what Kevin Rudd would.
Hmm. Well, Christina Keneally, I heard her make a comment. She said, I think it was in relation to Rudd.
Hmm.
It might have been about somebody else, but whatever it is, it was a good line. She said, I can think of 12 people off the top of my head who'd do better at the job, and one of those is my Labrador. So, I mean, he was completely dysfunctional character, had zero management skills, and everybody knows it. Like, you know, as Corey Bernardi says, you know, the UN's got a bad track record, you know, of installing unworthy people into positions of power, but that doesn't mean we should abandon reason and suspend critical judgment. So, yes, the UN needs the best possible leadership, and why would we make their job any more difficult by throwing Kevin Rudd into the mix? So apparently they sort of need the home country's sort of nod of approval in order to get to the next stage. So, oh, hopefully they just... Well, what's your prediction on that one, Scott? Let's make a prediction.
I heard on the radio the other day that that Cabinet's got some mixed feelings about him. But they're probably going to come out and say, yes, we support his application for the job, and then not do anything about it. So
I think they will. I think they'll let him... You know, they'll support it just because if they don't, he'll be badgering them for forever over it, and they couldn't stand it. So he'll just wear them down.
So, well, yeah, but I mean, you know, from what I've heard, the Eastern Europeans have got a pretty good run over the job. Mm. So I suspect that he's running at the wrong time.
Mm. Let's hope so. Yeah.
Well, yeah, let's hope so.
Hmm. Ah, Scott, now, Sonia Kruger was in the news recently. I think most people would be aware of where she basically came out and said that she thinks there should be a stop to Muslim immigration on television. And
you know, it's it is mighty tempting to agree with her.
Mm.
But I don't think it'll work. Mm. And, you know, and I don't think it's possible either. You know, it's... Well, Sam Dastyari has said that he's an atheist, although he was born in Iran and that sort of stuff. And he came from Iran where the birth certificates had their religion on it and that sort of stuff.
Mm. Actually, and he was a little bit shifty on Q&A because he said to Pauline Hanson, you know, so I was a five-year-old Muslim... you would have denied me coming to Australia. And she was quite surprised, and she said, are you a Muslim, Sam? And he didn't respond with a yes, and he said, I was a five-year-old Muslim. And, you know, had he been completely honest, he would have said, well, actually, I'm not a Muslim now. Apparently he's not. But he dodged that question, and, yeah, just a little bit interesting the way that he dodged that, so... but yeah, so with Pauline Hanson and Sonia Kruger in the news about Muslim immigrants, there was somebody, Scott, who made an outrageous statement. I'll read it to you. Listen to this one, dear listener. Individual Muslims may show splendid qualities, but the influence of the religion paralyzes the social development of those who follow it. No stronger retrograde force exists in the world. Yeah. No, it wasn't Pauline Hanson, and no, it wasn't Sonia Kruger. But, dear listener, it was, in fact, Winston Churchill. So, so there you go. No stronger retrograde force exists in the world. Winston Churchill, who spent a fair bit of time with Muslims. So, so Scott,
that was back when he was an army officer, wasn't it, back in the 1890s?
Mm. The Iron Fist, the Velvet Glove, and the 12th Man are all members of the Secular Party. There may be other contributors to the show who are also members. That does not mean that every opinion given on this show is policy of the Secular Party. To find out what is policy, go to the website of the Secular Party. And while you're there, think about joining and signing up, because we need more secularists in this world. Thanks. So I was looking at the Q&A with Pauline Hanson and the Sonia Kruger thing, and I've got a solution, Scott, to the whole mess.
Yep, what's the solution?
Mm. We don't have enough definitions, is my view. Like, when people say, you know, we should ban all Muslims, what they're really thinking of is a particular type of Muslim that they want to ban and not another type of Muslim. So it's such a broad, encompassing term, Muslim, and what's a... It's too broad, the spectrum, to be used on its own. So I think we need to categorise types of Muslims, and then we can say things. But the spectrum is so wide that if you just use the word Muslim, you're going to run into trouble because of that, because it just encompasses too many variable types of people. So Scott, there's Majid Nawaz is quite well known as an activist in this whole area, and he came out with the definitions of Islamism and jihadism. So are you aware of those ones?
Oh, I am aware of those, yeah.
So he felt the need to sort of make these distinctions, that an Islamism is the ideology seeking to impose any version of Islam over society. Jihadism is the use of force to spread Islamism. So you could be a peaceful Islamist in that you want Sharia law to be imposed, but you want it to happen about through peaceful means. But a jihadist is going to do that through force, which might be through terror or through military means. So he found that necessary as a definition. So along the same lines, Scott, when someone like Sonia Kruger or Pauline Hanson says, I want to ban all Muslims, I'm proposing now some definitions. You sit back and see if you agree with these ones. I'm going to break Muslims down into three groups just for the...
Okay.
So I reckon you've got, number one, a social Muslim. A Muslim by name only. Yes, believes in Allah and that Muhammad is the one true prophet, but doesn't think about it much. This person would eat anything and drink alcohol and would joke about showing people a prayer room which turns out to be a wine cellar. Women can wear anything. Your kids go to a non-Muslim school and you wouldn't care who they marry. So I reckon that's a social Muslim. Then I've got what I'm describing as a Muslim light. So for this person, you pray a little, fast occasionally, and visit the mosque, but not every week. Ladies should wear a hijab and kids must marry a Muslim. You're not interested in whether non-Muslims observe the faith and you don't care about Jews and gays. You have some friends who are non-Muslim, so that's a Muslim light. And then I've got a by-the-book Muslim. So you observe the doctrines quite strictly. You are offended by non-Muslims who do not observe Islam. Women wear a burqa or a niqab. Blasphemy should be punished. You pray five times a day. And you insist that your workplace make special arrangements to cater for your religious needs. You have no non-Muslim friends, you go to the mosque every week, you hate Jews, and your children must go to an Islamic school. So there we go. Social Muslim, Muslim light, and a by-the-book Muslim. And I reckon it would solve a lot of the issues if someone like Pauline Hanson or Sonia Kruger said, I want to ban by the book Muslims, but I'm okay with social Muslims. Like, they'd say that, I reckon.
Well, they might say it, but... I mean, I can't agree with you on that, I'm sorry, but I understand where you're coming from, but I can't agree with you on that.
You wouldn't think that they would agree with me? That they would say, oh...
Oh, they would agree with you, yeah, for sure, they would agree with you, but yeah. I don't think that I couldn't agree with you. Yeah.
You wouldn't be prepared to categorise Muslims?
No, I'm not prepared to categorise anyone, actually. I find one of the most distasteful things about religion is how it divides us into groups.
Yes.
And then we're going to subdivide the groups into subgroups. I find that really distasteful.
But only according to their beliefs.
Well, yeah, I know, but it's still, you're still subdividing people into groups, and I find that reprehensible.
Yeah, am I reprehensible, Scott?
No, I'm not saying you're reprehensible. Right. I find the suggestion reprehensible.
What? Well, if, for example, these definitions were well known, then and somebody said, well, it's like somebody says they're a vegetarian, and you say, okay, do you eat fish? And are you okay with eggs and dairy products? Like, because you kind of don't know what they really are. Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the difference between a vegan and a vegetarian. Like, yeah. A vegetarian, you know, a vegetarian will... Mm. You do have different degrees of vegetarianism and vegans and all that sort of stuff. Like, a vegetarian really shouldn't eat stuff that's got any animal products in it.
Mm.
But, you know, there are... vegetarians who don't really keep an eye out for jellies and that sort of stuff that have gluten.
Right.
Not gluten, but what's the word I'm looking for?
Gelatin. Yep,
gelatin, yep. Which is made from animal products.
Mm. Well, I might be inviting a work colleague to dinner who's I know is Jewish, but I've never eaten with this person before. And I'd say, are you a Jew that eats pork or not? Or are you a Jew that eats shellfish or not? Like, is that a reasonable thing to ask?
I think it's reasonable to ask. You can ask people, but...
It's categorising them as a Jewish light or a Jewish hardcore?
It is categorising people, it's only on a one-on-one basis that you categorise
them. All right.
Particular social event, you're planning on feeding him, so you had to find out whether or not he was, you know, completely kosher with his food.
Right.
Yeah.
I meet a Muslim somewhere in a social situation, and I'm curious about them. I say, do you drink alcohol and pork? Do you pray five times a day? Do your kids go to a non-Muslim school? Do you care whether they marry a non-Muslim? Like, these are all just questions about what they think about the world.
Yeah, and those questions are okay because they come from you to a person that you've met socially.
Yeah.
And it's okay to categorise them that way, but to have categorise a whole group of people before you bring them into the country. That I find reprehensible.
Ignoring the bringing them into the country bit, so if that's, if that's the sticking point. But as a means of talking about Muslims, say, for example, with Christians, we will divide Christians into Roman Catholics and Presbyterians and Mormons and you know, other categories. We'll say, which type of Christian are you? Like, because we want to find out what your beliefs are, basically, because certain categories of these people will have certain beliefs associated with them. So if somebody says, I'm a Roman Catholic, you go, okay, well, I know that you're going to believe pretty much in A, B, C, D. But if you're Presbyterian or Church of England, you're going to believe in X, Y, Z. So you sort of get a quick grip of what somebody believes in,
yeah? Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that the... spectrum and breadth of what it is to be a Muslim is so broad that when somebody says, I'm a Muslim, you go, well, I really don't know what you believe in or don't believe in. Like, it's such a broad category. And if we had a way of subdividing that category into some smaller ones, like a social Muslim, a Muslim light, or a by-the-book Muslim, then you'd go, oh, okay, you're a Muslim light. I know that you roughly believe in these things. That's not bad, is it?
No, that's not bad there, because again, it's focusing on a social interaction and that sort of stuff.
Right.
It's not used to determine who should be brought into the country.
Okay, so the issue was that it's then used to, you know, to whether people are allowed into the country or not.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay. And that's where my reprehensible definition comes from.
Because we can't ask people what their ideas are before they come in the country.
Yeah, I don't think you can ask any of those religious type questions of people before they come into the country. Okay, so you can't.
So,
ask
what if
that.
A guy is a neo? What if a guy is a well-known neo-Nazi from Germany, written broadly on the subject, and it's just a nasty piece of work, inciting hatred against Jews? I mean, do we allow that person into the country?
I don't think you allow him into the country because he's actually gone about it, and he's put pen to paper and that sort of stuff, and he has.
Yeah.
Put forward a political doctrine that we find offensive.
Yeah. So because of his ideas, we can say, you're not allowed in. Yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So if we were to talk to a person potentially coming into the country and we said, do you really hate Jews? And they said, yeah, I really hate Jews. I think they're just worth nothing. I think I want them dead.
At that point, you'd say no. Well, you're not welcome in the country.
Yeah. Well.
Okay.
We'd like to identify those people, wouldn't we? We'd like to know if people like that are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Scott. Here's where we say, "Are you a by-the-book Muslim?" Because at that point, if you're a by-the-book Muslim, there's a very, very high chance that you really hate Jews and you want them wiped off the planet. Like,
no,
at that
I
point, we can ask you a bit. We can ask you a few more probing questions and investigate your history, etc. But you know, the number of, like, we've seen, Scott, the media in the Middle East and the propaganda and for goodness sake, the books of the Quran and the Hadith and the Sirah, like, it's chock-a-block with Jew-hating, for example.
It's chock-a-block with Jew-hating. There's no doubt about that.
It's actually not going to be surprising to find rabid Jew-haters in a by-the-book Muslim community.
You've also got to...
And if they were to admit to it and say, yes, I hate Jews, well, would we say to that person, you're not allowed in?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that, no.
Well, there we go. Because I reckon lots of them would actually admit to it because they are so by the book that they couldn't deny that. Like, even if they knew that it meant that they couldn't come into Australia, I mean, some were lying, but there would be a significant proportion who actually simply could not refuse that they despise the Jews because they've been indoctrinated that way. So we can explore this at a later time, Scott, or we'll expand on it later on, but here's my point is that
I think we've set up ourselves to have a debate next episode.
Yeah, maybe, but I'm saying it's a legitimate thing that the spectrum of what it is to be Muslim is so broad, and that's why it's getting people into trouble, because many of us would say that a by-the-book Muslim is is either unwelcome or is going to take so long to assimilate that we can take less of that sort of person than we can a social Muslim. So simply because these are the ideas that are held by these people, not because they're black or brown or whatever. It's a matter of the ideas and beliefs that they have. So there we go, Scott. There's a controversial one. So
it is controversial, but anyway.
But anyway, if, dear listener, in future you hear the expressions social Muslim, Muslim light, and a by-the-book Muslim becoming, you know, popular usage, you heard it here first. Right. That's Sonia Kruger and Pauline Hanson.
I mean, just before we just leave that, I did watch Q&A today. And, you know, I don't like Pauline Hanson. I don't like her at all. But, you know, the whole thing was set up just to try and trip her up, wasn't it?
It was pretty... It was ugly in a number of levels, but one of them, it was a real... You got to hand it to her. She knew she was going to get a hard time, but she fronted up and took it on the chin. Like, you've got to at least give her credit for not ducking. I mean,
well, that's true.
Lots of people would have.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's true.
Hmm. Yeah, it was a pretty ugly episode and hard to watch at times. So.
It was, yes.
Scott, I thought it'd be fun if we had some crystal ball predictions.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Because we've got a new government just sworn in.
Yep.
In theory, they've got 3 years to run. And, you know, in theory, in 3 years' time, Malcolm Turnbull and Bill Shorten will be facing off for another election. And so the question is, a bit of crystal ball gazing, how long is this going to go, this parliament, before our next election? And who are the leaders going to be? And who's going to win, Scott?
I'm not prepared to put a six-pack on this right now because there's a hell of a lot of time to go yet. But who's going to win? I think Turnbull will win. Will he still be the leader in 3 years' time? That depends on how nutty the right wing of the Liberal Party actually are.
Mm.
They could be absolutely insane and they could rock the boat and cause all sorts of problems.
Mm.
And if they do that, they may well, you know, they may well convince enough of their colleagues to oust Turnbull and put Abbott back in which case it will be a disaster for the Liberal Party.
Mm.
But I think that good sense will take over the backbench. I think that they will understand that that their future lies with Turnbull, not Abbott.
All right. So you're saying Turnbull will be there. Turnbull will be there. You're saying it's going to go 3 years?
I think it'll go 2.5 to 3 years,
okay,
yeah.
Okay. And you reckon he'll win?
I reckon he'll win, yeah.
Okay. I reckon that there's just going to be too much tension in this parliament. Like, it's such a narrow majority, and the characters involved are all too highly strung for stability, and I reckon it's going to blow up at some stage. So,
right.
So I'm going for 2 year term. I reckon Malcolm will be gone, and you heard it here first, folks. Julie Bishop, put her in. She'll be the leader, and she'll face off against Bill Shorten, who will win. There you go. There's a prediction for 2 years' time.
Why do you think Bishop will be the leader?
I think that Turnbull will be thrown out by the right-wing elements, and she's very clever. She survived as deputy under all these different leaders.
Yeah, I know she's survived as deputy under all these different leaders, and she's never made the talk for the top job or anything like that.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that I think she's comfortable in her job now.
Mm. Well, I don't think she'll necessarily be the one pushing for it, but they'll knife Turnbull and it'll fall in her lap, put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see. Yeah.
Dear listener, if you have a prediction, you're welcome to send us a message. and
or even come on the show. Yeah, well, we've offered that several times, haven't we?
At least send us a message, and we'll note it down, and then if the events transpire that you have predicted, you will be invited onto the show to gloat and to tell us how clever you are. So. If you think we're completely wrong.
If your prediction turns out to be correct,
yes,
and you've got your prediction in early, you will get a six-pack of beer.
Oh, okay. Well, you're the one putting that one up, Scott, so... they've got to predict something worthwhile, like... So,
yeah, it's got to be worthwhile that they've got to make their prediction on here.
Yeah, I think so. If they pick something out of left field and do it quite accurately, perhaps. Yeah. All right, listener, there's a challenge for you. Briefly, Scott, we've got the census coming up towards the end of the year. The Atheist Association is been putting out advertising encouraging people to mark no religion if, in fact, they are not religious anymore. And a bit of an article that the Westfield and Stockland shopping centres have refused to allow this sort of advertising in their shopping centres. So there's a bit of a campaign to raise money. If you want to help them to increase that advertising, you can go online and throw some money their way as well. But that's sort of what the Atheists Association is up to.
And I did find it bizarre that they said that they didn't allow political advertising. Yes. And that's why that the whole thing was being knocked on the head.
Yeah.
I found that really weird.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Another article. So we mentioned him before, Tim Wilson. He got elected, so he's in the parliament.
Member for Goldstein.
And article in the Bible Society headed, "I Will Fight for Religious Freedom," says Tim Wilson, former Human Rights Commissioner. And the bit that got me was down in the article, he's gone, "Wilson said Australia is not a secular society, but rather a pluralist one, where different ideas and views could coexist."
He said, really weird too.
He said it would be wrong to impose secularism, and in fact, it would be a failure. No wonder we didn't get invited to the religious roundtable, Scott. rather, he proposed a lived culture of rights with responsibilities. Oh, dear. And that was our Human Rights Commissioner, who had a religious freedom roundtable, clearly of the view that it would be wrong to impose secularism and, in fact, would be a failure. Oh, thank God he's gone from there.
Exactly,
So that was Tim Wilson. Little article. It's a satirical article. I don't think I sent this one to you, Scott, but it's a picture of a big crate, and labelled on the crate, it's like on a pallet, and it's being loaded into an aeroplane, and the crate is labelled "Thoughts and Prayers." And it's a satirical article. "Aid has officially begun trickling out of the state as the first aircraft laden with thoughts and prayers departed New Orleans Airport early this morning, headed for earthquake victims in Ecuador." And just making a big joke about the thoughts and prayers. "Red Cross spokesman Ravi Singh thanked the people of Louisiana for their unbound generosity. We truly appreciate all the thoughts and prayers that have been donated," he said. "They won't help at all in terms of rebuilding homes or feeding people or treating the sick, but I'm sure the people in Ecuador will be somewhat thankful. I can't wait to see their faces when they see these huge crates arrive and they think it's full of drinking water or something." The good news, Scott, is that you can still donate your thoughts and prayers by heading to any local Facebook news outlet page and typing "thoughts and prayers" into the comments section. I like that. South Sea, the South China Sea, Scott.
Yeah, that was a decision that's just come down from the lost it. The arbitral arbit Arbitral Tribunal decision.
Permanent Court of Arbitration. So this is the one, dear listener, where China has been saying that it controls certain parts of the South China Sea and other countries are objecting, in particular the Philippines. And the US has been running its battleships through that area just to prove a point. And the whole thing has meanwhile been going through legal process through the Court of Arbitration, according to a treaty which China is a signatory to. And the court came down and absolutely slammed China, and everything came out in favour of the Philippines. And in fact, the court accused China of acting in bad faith, which is extremely unusual in these sorts of things. So a really big win for the Philippines. And because people might have heard about how China is building sort of airport runways and other things. They're actually dumping soil on areas to sort of create islands.
Islands, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That they can actually work from. And,
and then they get the 12 nautical miles around the islands and all that sort of stuff. Yeah,
yeah. So, you know, dear listener, if you are at some stage a contestant in a beauty pageant and they ask you for your opinion about South China Sea and the decision, you could make the point that the critical concept is that you can have either an island, a rock, or a low tide elevation. So an island, naturally formed area above high tide, that you can actually exist on. You've got a rock, which is above high tide but incapable of human habitation. And you've got a low tide elevation. And if you have an island, you get 200 nautical miles of exclusive economic zone. If you've got a rock, you get 12 nautical miles. And if it's a low tide elevation, you get nothing. So in this case, they said that what China was relying on were, in fact, low tide elevations, gave them no rights at all, and in fact that they were encroaching on the Philippines' exclusive economic zone and will probably have to pay them money and recompense and stuff like that. So there we go, Scott. A pretty compelling decision, and we're spending $50 billion on submarines that we could head out there and be involved in that fracas. Meanwhile, we've got an international court that just said to China, you know, you've got no leg to stand on.
Yeah, now China has said they're going to ignore the ruling.
Yeah, well,
now that is a concern, because the United States has been, like you said, driving their battleships up and down the sea lanes.
Yeah.
And, you know, this sort of saber-rattling's not good for the world economy.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's not, but whether we're going to go to war on that is, I think, highly unlikely. And, Scott, anyway, I got the submarine in for anyone playing the drinking game. Are you enjoying the show and would you like to help out? There's a few easy things you can do. You can like us on Facebook and you can go onto iTunes and leave a positive review. That would be much appreciated. Also, if you're really keen, you could donate to us via Patreon. For details on how to do all this, visit our website. Thanks for your support. And now, back to the podcast. Scott, it wouldn't be a program lately if we didn't have something on Pakistan behaving badly.
Oh, no. Wasn't this terrible?
Young lady, Quandil Balok. And she was the Pakistani equivalent of Kim Kardashian, it seems.
Yeah, she was the social media duchess, whatever you want to call her.
Mm.
She was performing in a way that most of us over here would be thinking, well, it's pretty ho-hum, but in Pakistan it was considered disgraceful.
Mm.
And her brother took offence to it all, drugged her, and then strangled her.
Mm.
And then when he was arrested by the police, he said that he was proud of what he did and that he did it to restore the family's honour.
Mm.
Now, what I didn't realise until I read the other article from Al Jazeera that you sent me was that it was possible for a family to forgive someone for an honour killing.
Mm.
And that way he would avoid the charges of murder.
Mm.
But I'm very pleased to say that the family cannot forgive the son.
Yes, because the Pakistani authorities have told them they can't.
Yeah, I have that.
Yes.
So, yeah, okay.
So
yeah.
It's because the Pakistani authorities somehow barred the family from legally forgiving their son. Like,
okay.
Yeah. The mind boggles as to where that authority comes from and how they do it. But yeah, you're right. Somewhere in these articles it says that there's about 500 honour killings every year.
Yeah, so you're talking about 10 a week.
I mean, she had apparently asked for some sort of security help, which wasn't given to her, because I think she was worried about being killed by other people. I mean, there's no way security was ever going to help save her from her own brother. Terrible. I mean, he said, "I have no regrets. Whatever was the case, the sister's behaviour was completely intolerable," he said. Oh, dear.
Yeah, I found that really bizarre that he would say that. You know, I mean, for God's sake, you know, she's still his sister.
Mm. And unfortunately, Scott, social media in Pakistan full of people applauding his actions.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I find that really sickening that, you know, that one, that he did it, two, that he bragged about it, and three, that he's got a cheer squad backing him up. Mm. You know, I find that really reprehensible. Mm. I'm with you. I don't want to even fly over the bloody place. You know?
Yep. Well, I don't want any buy the book Muslims from there coming here, like, if that's what we're facing, Scott. There's plenty of people who need help. We can help a lot more of them.
Can help a lot more of them who are fleeing Muslims. You know,
if we're talking about reducing overall misery in the world, we can help a lot of others. We, you know, these people are so dysfunctional that we'll spend all of our resources just stopping them from killing their own sisters, for goodness sake.
Yeah, I mean, like, Pakistan really would have been better off if they couldn't get their act together now.
Mm.
Then they would have been better off remaining under British rule.
Mm.
You know.
Oh, dear. Scott, finally, let's have a bit of a chat about Paris and what happened there.
Nice.
Yes. Oh, Nice, sorry. Well, I've got Paris written here. Let's throw me up. Thank you. Nice, indeed. Where that...
It was very disturbing, wasn't it?
It was.
And, you know, I did have to... I did admit, when I first heard it, that the first thing that went through my head was that the French are going to have to dust off the guillotine. But I did calm down after that. And I just don't know whether or not it was actually an Islamic State thing that motivated this guy to go and commit the atrocity, or whether it was just he was... mental behaviour. I don't know. And I still don't know. I mean, I know Islamic State has said, well, you know, he was a soldier of ours and that sort of stuff. But they have form for claiming things that they don't really have any legitimate claim to.
Yeah. Yep.
And so it's very convenient and very easy to say that he was acting on behalf of the Islamic State, but I just don't know if we can say that definitively.
Yeah. Yep. There is a bit of a feeling, isn't it, that sometimes people can just go crazy where they want to go and shoot people and try and kind of to cover themselves with a little bit of inverted commas honour, they'll ascribe their actions to a higher cause rather than just they were so pissed off they decided to kill as many people as they could. Like,
yeah,
you get the sense sometimes that people can just sort of latch onto these things. So could be bits of everything, couldn't it? It could be just an angry man who's not happy, who's just ready to kill people and latches on to a bit of jihadism at the same time as a way of making it seem more noble. Who knows what goes on in the mind, but just you can't go and watch a simple fireworks display on a promenade without...
Well, that was the thing that was really disturbing, was that these, you know, the French people were out enjoying Bastille Day. Mm. You know, I've printed off the conversation. Nice attacks brings difficult questions into sharp focus. Why France? If you live in France, you enjoy Bastille Day. There is a buzz in the air as you celebrate a day off in the middle of summer with your family and friends. You go to the fireworks. It's good to be it's good to be in France and to remember the founding principles of the state, liberty, égalité, fraternity. Mm. You know, this idiot, clown, whatever you want to call him, he deliberately targeted people who were just going out to enjoy themselves. Mm. They were going out to enjoy the liberty and liberty that their ancestors had fought for. Mm. And I found it really disturbing that he did what he did. But it was even more disturbing that he got away with it. Mm. You know, he didn't get away with it. He was shot fairly quickly, but it really goes to show that to commit mass atrocities, you don't need an AR-15. You know, you can do it with a truck.
Mm.
And that's the thing that I find most disturbing, is that he did it with a truck. Mm. You know, and it was good that the police, you know, they did manage to stop him fairly quickly, but still in all, you know, he killed 84 people in 30 seconds or something like that.
Yeah, it's amazing how many...
You know, that,
yeah, it's amazing how many in such a short space of time.
Yeah, it is, and it's that's what's most disturbing about it, is you know, in such a short period of time, so many people were dispatched.
Yeah.
It's, and you know, there's 100 more that are injured and that sort of stuff. Now, you know, the other thing about the injuries is you don't know how many of them are spinal injuries and all that sort of stuff. Mm. Who are going to be left ruined for the rest of their life.
Yep.
It's really quite disturbing, and it's anyway let's take it back, and let's say that Hollande is right, and he wasn't, that he was acting on behalf of the Islamic State and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
If there is one country in Europe that has bent over backwards for Muslim refugees coming from Syria,
mm.
it's really got to be France,
right?
In it. Oh, the Germans have. The Germans have taken in more, I suppose.
Yep.
But the French have opened their homes up and that sort of stuff to allow Muslim migrants into the country.
I think a lot of French Muslim migrants are from the colonies that have...
Sort yeah, of... they are. They're from North Africa.
Yep.
You know, that's where a lot of them have come from.
Yep.
And that sort of stuff. But I found it... let's assume that they're right and it is an Islamic State attack. I found that really bizarre that they would choose to attack France and choose to attack them on their national day, because France has, like I've said, you know, gone out of its way to help people from Syria and from, well, and also try and resettle people from North Africa.
Well, Scott, I'm going to give you a statistic, and you might say, well, it's amazing that doesn't happen more often, because one of the articles I read led me to a Pew Research article from 2007, where Muslim populations around the world were polled as to their thoughts on different issues. And what they asked them was, can suicide bombing of civilian targets to defend Islam be justified? And in France, 16% said often and sometimes, 19% said rarely, and only 64% said never. What an appalling statistic. 35% could think of instances where suicide bombing of civilian targets to defend Islam is justified. Muslims in France. Scott, I'm going to add to my categories. You know how I had a buy the book? I'm going to have a buy the book killer. So somebody who is all of those things and is prepared to kill someone or kill their sister. So add them to, it's going to be a fourth category, a buy the book killer.
Yeah, and, you know, it's, it really is quite disturbing. The more you read about this, it does strike me as, I don't know, I mean, I read another article this week that, I should have printed them all out, but anyway, there was another article this week where the father of the guy who's now dead said that he had mental problems and all that sort of stuff, and that, you know, this is not Islamic State, it was his mental condition. Mm. Either way, it's...
Can I give you another statistic? Really is,
yeah.
Okay, so the same question, but at this time broken down into age groups. So again, in France, if you take Muslims 18 to 29, so young people, only 57% said never justified.
Yeah. See, that's really disturbing. 42%
could find a case where it would be justified.
Yeah.
Oof.
See, that's really concerning, because the young would have grown up in France and all that sort of stuff, and they would have grown up with French values and that type of thing, and they're turning their back on the French values.
Mm. And in fact, that had the most frightening statistic. It's compared with other countries, Germany, Spain, Great Britain and the US, and the French one is actually the most frightening statistic. So if, dear listener, you're interested in those statistics, there is a link on the website to that. But, oh, goodness me, that's a lot of people, Scott, I think.
It is a hell of a lot of people that have died. And, you know, of the 100 injuries, I go back to my point saying we don't know how many of them are spinal injuries or anything like that.
Yeah.
You would suspect that there'd have to be a number of them would have to be spinal injuries, I would have thought.
Mm, yeah. Scott, it was way back in episode 21 where there was the shootings in Paris, and we finished off with the French national anthem, which was quite stirring, because at the time we were told that as people left that stadium they were singing the French national anthem, and didn't hear of any similar stories on this occasion in Nice. But you know, good luck to the French in sorting out what's going on there. But with such a magnificent anthem, Scott, it almost gives you hope, doesn't it? So
it does give you hope. It is a very stirring anthem, yes.
So as we sign off with the sounds of the anthem in the background, that's the end of episode 54. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks very much for listening, everyone. Bye now.
Is safe in all system. Well, dear listener, did you enjoy that episode of the podcast? If you did, I've got a favour to ask. First up, tell some friends. Let them know about the podcast. You'll be discussing something at some time, and you might be repeating something I've said. And when you're talking to your friends, say, hey, I heard this on this podcast, and it's worth listening to. And maybe pick an episode that you think's a good one and direct them to it. Like, grab their phone and go to their podcast app and search for Iron Fist Velvet Glove and subscribe on their behalf on their phone and just put the word out. The other thing is you could become a patron and support the show. So if you go to our website, you'll see a link to Patreon, and there are some different options for subscribing and paying per episode. And really, the amount that you pay depends on what you get from the podcast. So there's different levels ranging from $1.50 Australian to, I think, $10 and various ones in between. It's really, what do you think it's worth? Is it worth a cup of coffee? Is it worth more than that, less than that? Whatever you get out of it, because not everybody gets the same. Maybe you don't listen to the whole thing. Maybe you never talk about it with people. Maybe you really couldn't care less half the time whether the podcast is there. It'll be different for everybody. So if you get a lot out of the podcast, contribute a bit more. If you don't get much, contribute less. But in any event, you can subscribe there. If you don't like the idea of a regular subscription, the website has a link to a PayPal donation. So you could just do a one-off donation every now and again. So there you go. It'd be good to spread the word, get a few more listeners. And that way, look, if we ended up getting more listeners and more money, we could do maybe a second episode or more special episodes, provide some more content. So it's up to you. If you think it's worthwhile, let people know. Thanks.